Dear brothers and sisters, good morning. Friday, December 5th, was a very important day on the calendar. It was an incredibly important day to remember. We had a big celebration on December 5th this past Friday. And what did we celebrate on December 5th 2 days ago? Blessed Nicholas Steno, exactly right. Okay, good. The Feast of Blessed Nicholas Steno is very important because he's a great guy and very important, I think, for young people to know about because he is basically a saint and he was a great scientist. He is, in fact, the inventor of modern geology and paleontology and on the side just wrote a book about how tears are formed, but I guess that's important too. Okay. And Nicholas Steno was in fact a Lutheran in Northern Europe when he was doing most of his scientific work. And he revolutionized the field because before him it was believed that stone just happened to be stacked on one another and fossils just happened to form naturally within the stone. And he was the first one to really understand, no, this is a sign of age, this is a sign of development, this is a sign of process, and to study that process. And as he's doing all this as a Lutheran, it suddenly occurs to him that he has this great scientific mind, that he's trained to look at evidence, to evaluate evidence, to test arguments. He has this great scientific mind that he's never applied to his faith. And as soon as he applies his scientific mind to his faith, he realizes that Lutheranism is wrong and only Catholicism could be right. And so he leaves the Lutheran Church, joins the Catholic Church at a time that it was very, very dangerous to do so in Northern Europe, and eventually becomes a priest and a bishop. And he still had a love for science, but he used that same training of his mind to study philosophy and theology. Became a great teacher of Northern Europe of the Catholic faith in Denmark. He's Danish. And still today, there are scientific institutes throughout the world and scientific awards named for him, and there are craters on the moon and Mars named for him. But I wanted to really look at that pattern because I think that it's radically important because so many people, just as a side note, so many people tend to think that the more you study science, the more likely you are to reject faith. And I want it to be very clear that Nicholas Steno, the more he studied science, the more he recognized the true faith. Because his mind was trained to appreciate truth. But I also wanted to note that pattern. This is an important pattern. It's a pattern that the church loves and promotes. That pattern that as he took truth seriously, even though it was scientific truth, he prepared his mind for the reception of divine truth. Prepared his mind. Today in the gospel, during this Advent season, we hear about John the Baptist. Now look, y'all, there are numerous people who went directly to Jesus without ever having heard of John the Baptist. And yet, nevertheless, John the Baptist had an important role, which was to prepare the way of the Lord, right? And we know two of the apostles, at least, were disciples of John. Andrew and John were disciples of John the Baptist before they became disciples of Christ. And it was John the Baptist who pointed them to Christ. This idea of preparation. Prepare the way of the Lord, make straight his paths. And that's what Advent is all about, is preparation. Preparing the way of the Lord. And the church loves this idea. She promotes this idea. She understands that God can act however he wants. But that she recognizes that in general, not just for our first conversion, but even for our deepening conversion, there are messengers that God has sent into his creation that prepare the way of the Lord. So, for example, it comes as some surprise to people, but whenever you join seminary, you don't start by studying theology or the Catholic faith. You spend 4 years, if you start right out of high school, you spend 4 years studying philosophy and the liberal arts and sciences and stuff like that. Why? Because the church wants to train your mind to understand the truth before she entrusts divine truth to it. In the same way, God, I think in a much more important way, God has that wonderful commandment, right? Honor your mother and your father, and created the human family to begin with. Why? Because it's in the human family that we first learn how to love, how to obey, what's right, what's wrong, and it's a preparation for our relationship with God. And that's why it's so important that we have healthy families, because if people get that wrong, a lot of times their children get their relationship with God wrong. But in both cases, you have this kind of natural preparation. Is it strictly necessary? No. But it may be necessary for me or you, right? There are things that aren't universally necessary that are in fact necessary for me because of the kind of person I am. And God makes sure to take care of that. So this idea of kind of a natural preparation, what the church calls the preambula fidei, that which walks before the faith, a natural preparation, like John the Baptist, for the encounter with Christ. Everybody with me so far? Okay, good. But if the study of philosophy and science prepares our mind for divine truth, and growing up in a family and engaging in community and everything like that prepares our heart for the divine commandments and divine righteousness. During this Advent season, I mentioned that we're focusing on and we'll be making our way toward the highest form of prayer, which is contemplation of God, where you simply encounter God, sit with God, relish God, love God in a simple glance. And that seems to be based primarily on his beauty, which is not a sensible beauty. We hear today in the first reading, not by appearance shall he judge, nor by hearsay shall he decide, right? It's something higher than the senses. And yet, nevertheless, despite that, the scriptures speak about it in a very sensual way, right? Talks about how he'll have the band of righteousness about his waist, about how the earth will flourish and flower, about how his throne will be like the sun and the moon, about how the calf and the lion will lie down together. Like, it's all beauty everywhere. And St. Paul, riffing on this, I love this, starts talking about how we have to have harmony with one another, concord with one another, and you think he's being metaphorical. You think he's not actually talking about singing in choir. Until at the end of the reading he says, so that we can sing the glory of God, right? He's deliberately playing on that metaphor, I think. And so, what I would suggest to you, and certainly I'm not the first to suggest it, what I would suggest to you is that just as science and philosophy prepares the mind for divine truth, and just as family life and community life and law prepares the heart for divine goodness, so art and culture and natural beauty prepare the soul for contemplation. And are they strictly necessary? No. But the church promotes the heck out of them. Right? It's not like the church just likes nice things. The church invests so much in beauty and preserves so much beauty because she understands that true beauty lifts up the human heart like John the Baptist did to prepare the way of the Lord, to prepare for an encounter within with God's own glory. And we see that prayer of Moses, right? We talked already about God's beauty last weekend, but we see that prayer of Moses, that beautiful prayer of Moses that we'll be praying throughout the Advent season. Lord, do let me see your beauty. Do let me see your beauty. Last weekend, and I'm not entirely sure what wording I gave at each of the three Masses, but last weekend I encouraged you to, along with other Advent penances, to find something that was truly beautiful and that required effort on your part, right? Whether it's to study classical literature or engage in classical music or to study painting or to look at astronomy or to go to natural parks and study nature, etc. I suggested that we do something that we would both appreciate but that took effort. And why? Because the effort part is important. The effort part is the training. So all of us have things that we enjoy that require no effort on our part at all. And that's good. It's like junk food for the soul, right? I mean, we all need to relax from time to time, and that's perfectly fine. But it's exactly because it's effortless on our part that it doesn't do anything to change us or prepare us for the way of the Lord. I remember Father McIntyre watched the show, and I was like, why are you watching that show? And he said, it's mindlessness amuses me. And certainly, you know, I don't think I'm closer to God because I watched Cobra Kai. All right, this is a reality, okay? There are things that are just junk food, and we get it. But in the same way that eating cheeseburgers is not going to prepare you to run a marathon, so also junk food for the soul, perfectly delightful, but it's not going to actually prepare your soul to encounter God. Whereas something where it's both beautiful and requires attention, requires concentration, requires learning, requires mental effort on our part, it forces us into the habits of sitting still, of eliminating distraction, of focusing, and of seeking, of trusting that there's something here to appreciate. One of the things that I tell people all the time whenever I help them study Shakespeare, because, you know, I do that a lot. I don't actually do that a lot, but, you know, one of the things that I mention all the time is, like, guys, you have to remember, Shakespeare was incredibly popular and successful in his day. He was blockbuster entertainment in his day, which means that there's something there to appreciate. This is not something that we're just imposing on you from without. There's something really there. And yet, today, 400 years later, it may take some effort on our part, but if you make that effort, you'll find something that's a true treasure. Why is that kind of thinking important? Because it's the exact same thinking you have to take into the chapel if you're ever going to encounter God. If we're perpetually distracted, if we're perpetually self-obsessed, if we're perpetually just focused on what we want at the moment, if we're perpetually just thinking that we can go into the chapel and that God is just going to gratify us like a Netflix series, then we'll never reach the true prayer that He calls us to. In the same way that if we hand our mind over to gossip and conspiracy theories and opinions and all this other stuff that kind of ruins our mind, we'll never understand His word. Right? And in the same way as if we disobey our parents and disobey the law and disobey all kinds of other things, we'll never obey His commandments. Do you all understand that? Do you understand what I'm getting at here? And that's why the church, as I said, it's not essential. We don't oblige you. It's not like we say you come to Mass on the first Sunday of the month and the second Sunday of the month you study Shakespeare. Right? I mean, this is not what we do. It's not obligatory, but it is radically promoted. Radically promoted, encouraged, as much as the church can possibly encourage it. In the same way that the church celebrates John the Baptist. Because there were people who came just directly to Jesus. But there's a reason that God sent John. And that is because most of us need our hearts to be prepared, need our hearts to be formed, need our hearts to be shaped, need our souls to be directed, so that we come to such a place that God's truth radiates in our mind, that God's goodness embraces our hearts, and that God's beauty raptures our souls. God bless you all.